Welcome to Bee's Table Talk, the podcast in which we have great conversations about business and our economy. My name is Bee Kyle. I am the president and CEO of the St. Paul Area Chamber, and I am so glad that you've joined us today. This is one of my favorite things to do. This is my chance to have conversations with leaders and friends among us who are doing great things within the community and within their organizations. And this year, I'm delighted to invite our sponsor for this podcast, Wells Fargo. Wells Fargo has a legacy of extraordinary engagement in this region, and they're investing in their priorities through their work and their individual leaders. And I'm honored that they choose to support this enterprise as well, helping me introduce folks like my guest today to you. So more to come on that. My guest today then is my colleague and friend, Christy Lazenberry. She's the director of the DEI Collaborative here at the St. Paul Area Chamber. Now, I've known Christy for years through her work at McKinsey and the Itasca Project. And I found her from the beginning to be thoughtful, kind, as well as a very talented, insightful professional. So it was our great fortune that Christy wanted to commit this next season of her career to work in DEI and with my organization. So I would love to introduce you to this fabulous woman. Christy, thanks for sitting down with me.
You are so welcome, Bee. Thanks for having me. I was looking forward to this.
Me too. And you all should know that, of course, we work down the hall from one another. So this is lots of fun for Christy and I to be all formal and professional as we introduce her to you. So this is, I want people to get to know you, Christy, because you're fabulous. So we want to talk about you. And I didn't know much of your life story when you joined this organization. And so I have been fascinated by the many facets of your life story. So let's go way back, if you would, to when you were a younger woman in Minneapolis. Some of your experiences in the music industry and how that shaped you. And don't be shy, because you have a great story.
Thank you, Bee, for being so kind. I appreciate it. So actually, I'm going to take you back to St. Paul, where I was born and grew up in my youth. I lived in the Rondo area, and I found out more things after my father's death, but I found out that my father was very much involved in community activism. And in fact, it was so interesting because my brother found a photo of my father with two or three other Black gentlemen around the time when the state came to the Black community and said, we're taken out this whole section for the freeway and done deal. And it's a picture of my father and these other gentlemen at the table talking with this representative from the state. So wow. I know that he was involved in that work in trying to get things changed. But as we know, it did not. But all that work that my father did in those early years, some things that I observed, some things I didn't, found out later that he did, really have influenced me in terms of my activism, because I saw him take action when there were things that were happening in the community. And that's something that was instilled within me. So I am very grateful to the influence that my father had on me, because it's really led into shaping the kind of person that I am now and the things that I do now. But back then, the other thing that I did, I did stuff over at the Hallie Q. Brown Center, working with students there. But I got into acting while I was there. And I acted with Lou Bellamy and stage managed with him. And this was before it was called Penumbra.
I didn't have any, you just keep telling me stories and faces to you that I didn't have any idea about. How cool is that?
It was it was a great experience for me. And then I got lured out of acting into music stuff, but that's where, every time I see anything with Penumbra, it takes me back to the days talking with Lou when he was just a young man starting out with all of this, but look what it's come to be now.
Wow.
So at some point when I was in college, I sang in choirs and things like that. And yeah, he had a really good friend who we were always harmonizing and singing together. Well, at some point, I got a role in a musical about Nettie Hayes Sherman. And it was performed at the Landfall Theater when the Landfall Theater was here.
Uh-huh.
And I portrayed Nettie in a dramatic role where she popped up and would sing. But she was still, she was in her 70s. She still played the piano. But Nettie Hayes Sherman was this way ahead of her time Black woman who was a jazz pianist. And she entertained the likes of Babyface Nelson and any of those guys that would come up from Chicago when they were on the lam. And she was the first Black woman to have her own radio show. So they developed a whole thing around her and we did this play, or, well, musical. And it was while I was doing that musical that I met someone who was here from Brooklyn, New York, and he was a music producer. He played my husband in the play.
Oh.
His name is Pepe Willie.
I'm sorry, and what was his name again? You broke
Pepe Willie.
Okay, Pepe, right, okay.
Yes. Yeah. And so he started, you know, we started hanging out, and then he and my best friend Marcy and I were singing in the car one night to something on the radio, and he was like, do you guys want to do background vocals? And that's where everything started with the music. And that's when we started writing, and I got into writing, and we were doing, Marcy and I were doing background vocals on his demo tapes. And within that, he had been married at one point to Prince's first cousin. So that was his introduction to Prince when Prince was just a teen. And that's at some point after we were recording, we did a lot of studio recording. Then we started working with Prince, and he rehearsed in our basement when he was first starting his The Revolution. It wasn't called The Revolution yet, but he auditioned and rehearsed in our basement for 6 months. And we produced his first show for the Warner Brothers executives at the Capri Theater. And that was years of me ensconced into the music business and learning about copywriting and licensing and all those kinds of things in the music world. And it was interesting for me at the time because, you know, I still had a day job and then I did music, and it was two completely different worlds, right?
But listen to what you're saying. I'm smiling. You all can't tell. I'm smiling ear to ear and shaking my head like, la, 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 young woman. I like to be in theater. I'm in choir. La, la, la. Oh, this young kid, your name is Prince. Like, what's your first name? What's your last name? Like, who are you? Oh, you want to sing? Oh, and then it turned, you didn't know then what your story would mean to you and to the world. How fabulous.
I know it. It makes me angry now because there were things if I knew, and I should right. always assume that whatever's happening now, something big's going to happen in the future. I should have assumed that. I should have been saving stuff. I should have been taking pictures. There was so much stuff I should have been doing, and I didn't.
Yeah, but he was just a punky little 15-year-old kid.
He was a punky little thing. And he, you know, he was funny and shy, and we brought him in because he was so skilled on so many instruments, and his work ethic was like, you know, I don't know how he does it, because does he sleep? But he always worked. And we had him then play a variety of instruments on our recordings, which have eventually gone out and been around the world. So a lot of interesting experiences in the music world. So many people that I have met that are like big name people that, you know, David Letterman, I was back in the green room with him, with Paul Schaefer, and meeting all those guys. And it there were so many things that I got to do during that time period.
Have been the mid 80s? Like, what kind of time frame are we talking about?
We're talking about, the mid 80s, late 70s into the mid 80s. And now we're revealing my age. But anyway.
Right, well, mine too, because as anybody who's listening to this now, they're going to be thinking, okay, where was I? So in the mid 80s, I was in college and getting ready to ship overseas with the military. And getting married and all those other things. And you were in that. I mean, you just don't know what other people are doing at the same time.
I know. It really is an amazing thing about, what kind of connections you actually had, but didn't even realize.
Didn't even realize.
Yeah, back in the day. So it was a huge part of my life. I learned a lot of things about the music business and about, people in the music business. And, I think it really did develop some of the skills that I use now in terms of confidence with certain people. Although, my confidence has ballooned here more recently, but I feel like there was a lot there that kind of bolstered up my confidence, especially being around people who were like huge. Mm-hmm. Big name people. So it was a great time of my life, did a lot of things, and I really enjoyed it.
What made you transition out of music in terms of your career? How did that balance shift for you?
So, there was a point, because we had been doing music business for quite a while, and our business never really grew to a point where I could, forget a day job and just do that. Uh-huh. Which is something that I learned about the music business. It's there's a very, very, very small percentage of people who make it big that are trying to do this work. And then the music business changed. It used to be you could just walk up to a label and go up with your tape and get in and play your music. Everything is blocked off now, and you can't even really make the kind of money you used to be able to make unless you're a big name on a tour circuit.
Wow.
Because just the way the music business operates has changed so much. Plus, everybody who writes and performs, their stuff is streaming, but the kind of revenue that you get from streaming is minuscule. It's minuscule. So I think it's really hard for people now in the music business to, make a big name and make the kind of income you want, unless you're lucky. That's part of it, being in the right place at the right time. But it just got too hard. And that's when I was like, I think I want to look into some other things.
We'll move off the subject for a minute, but my final thought on this is that to some degree, what we're seeing due to social media, and there's goods and bads to this, right? It used to be that stupid people were isolated. Now they get to find one another on the internet. So that's great.
True.
But on the other hand, it's the beautiful thing is in music, for example. My daughter, my adult daughter, she's a native of the internet. And so she finds artists on the internet all the time, on TikTok and other, and she'll say, oh, mom, you got to hear this artist. And oh, you got to hear, and influencers and people who the power is being taken away from, the power is being owned by the people with the talent, and they're going out on the internet and sharing their story. Now, they don't, like you said, they don't always make the money, but the visibility is being taken ownership by the people who are trying to do the work. And I just love that equalizing factor.
Yes.
Right? You can self-publish your book. You can self-publish your music. You can own your own voice, and you don't have to wait for somebody to give you permission to talk or sing or write.
Yes, I agree with you on that, B. I think there's whole new kinds of opportunities that have opened up for people where people can now follow their favorite artist just on Instagram and YouTube. And, they may do EPs or LPs and put them out because you can put them out yourself. Nice. iTunes, Spotify, all these places, you can put it out there yourself. And so many people are doing that. And I think it's created a great avenue for people who would have never gotten a chance to get out there, to at least get their music out there and get some sort of following. And to be honest, there is a small percentage of folks who do that, who then are noticed by the number of followers that they have. And if they started to get income off their channels, you know, then the big labels will take notice.
Right.
And do something with them.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but when I watch YouTube videos and I see all these regular people who are now are influencers who are being sponsored by companies to speak on the company's behalf, I'm like, companies are recognizing the power of the people, right? That we get, I just love that transition, and you're seeing it live, and you're seeing it particularly with music as well. So such a great story. So, you know, the lion is caged and you have to get a day job that, you know, pays the bills as you're, you know, exploring the beauty and the possibilities of music. So you had to kind of move away professionally for your day job, as it were. So my next question, because again, folks, Christy is this wildly multifaceted woman, because we hear about her music and here, I didn't know she was an actress. So keep acting like you're having a good time at work. Okay. But she's also a storyteller. Okay. Now, I might be taking you out of order, but tell us about that. How did you get into this storytelling, and what does that actually mean to you?
So storytelling, you know, when I was back doing things at Hallie Q. Brown, and even before that, I liked to read stories to small children. That was something I would do when I was a school secretary or in the Osceola School District. I would go into classrooms and I would read stories to kids. And I was always very animated, and the kids loved it. And I loved the feedback too, right?
Right.
And so that was always there in me. But when I was working at McKinsey & Company, I was helping with planning Black History Month. This was just a few years ago. And I thought, I don't know what grabbed my attention, but I was like, oh, I would like to get a storyteller in for this. So I searched online and I found this griot, as they're called. Janice the Griot was her name. And it was during COVID. So she was doing everything over Zoom, because she lived out on the East Coast. So she came in and we had a few conversations before we set her up to do this. And in the process of these conversations, I just kept asking her questions about how do you do this? How did you start? You know, all this kind of thing. And then I said, I'm really interested in this. So she hooked me up with an organization that's here in North Minneapolis called the Black Storytellers Alliance. Mm-hmm. And they are a subsidiary of the National Association of Black Storytellers. So there's a nationwide group. And so she hooked me up with Notando and Vusi Vuzumulu, who are well known in North Minneapolis for their community work and for their storytelling. And Notando is like, she's a master at this, right? Mm-hmm. So every year they hold in spring, like 10 sessions, 2 hours on a Saturday morning, where it's training for storytelling. So we do it over Zoom, and they bring in master storytellers from all over, like East Coast, some local, different places, who teach us different facets about storytelling. So body language, vocalizations, how you portray visually in audio different characters, and how to actually take a story and turn it into your own, and how to manage it with time frames. You got 12 minutes, you got 5 minutes. How do you change the story to fit into those times? So it's all those kinds of things. And I take it every year because it's so much fun. And it's such a wonderful 2 hours on Saturday morning, because it also fills my soul, just the folks I'm with on this. It's so wonderful. Anyway, so I've done a few things in the area. I did the fair last year. I actually was at Studio Z downtown St. Paul for Halloween, and I did a scary story there. So I've done a few things, and I'm getting there. They tell me I'm doing very, very well at it. And I'm trying now to build up my catalog of stories. So I need a catalog of them. And right now I have like 5 or 6 that I can do reliably, and I need to add on a few more. So I got this group. So storytelling to me is such a great way to connect with people. And it is the process of learning how to tell a story from, say it's a tale from somewhere in the continent of Africa, or it's a tale that your grandmother or grandfather told you when you were growing up. And you take those stories and you strip them down to the bare bones of what's necessary to get this message across. And then you fill it all in with your own personality and create a story that if somebody else was telling the same story, it would be totally different. But I've also been able to apply this skill into the whole thing with DEI, because storytelling is so fundamental for people knowing you and understanding you as a human being. And we need to really push the concept of storytelling, because people connect to it so much better than anything else when they hear something that's personal about you. Mm-hmm. And it helps people understand you as a human being and why you think the way that you do, mm-hmm. and do the things that you do, because it helps you understand, oh, that's why they're like this. Mm-hmm. And it's their story. It can take nothing. It's the truth. But it helps you understand people and create a better bond and more empathy with people. So the whole concept of storytelling to me is totally intertwined with DEI. And I've been working on finding ways to take the process of how you develop a story into, you know, doing some things working with DEI and helping people work through things. So I love storytelling. I love it, love it, love it.
Well, you know, it does tie in with the work that you're doing currently. And I'd like to go there. Before we do, though, I want to, this is a surprise question for you. but I'm listening to the many and hearing about the many faces of Christy. And all of them are expressive and joyful and big and external, right? Expressive, I should say. And you had shared with me at one point that you didn't feel that you were allowed that path at work, that you kind of had to have, or even at home, you had to have your hat on, as it were, which I just find so counter to this nature, this ebullient nature. I don't know how you put it in a basket, right? And put a cover on it with this joy and love and energy that just exudes from you. So when you think about, so has your, like, physical and work expression of this joy and this ebullience in DEI, has it kind of been manifest in this current job? Or
yes,
what does that look like? And then tell us a little bit about what you're actually doing.
So I feel like some personal changes in my life where I had felt kind of under control most of the time. I always felt like I was tamping down my expressiveness and everything. Right. I felt like I was tamping it down and keeping a lid on it, just like you said. And I feel like when I was working where I was at McKinsey, it's a very, very professional, not that, you know, other places are professional too, but McKinsey has a certain professional thing to it. And so I feel like some of the work I was doing in the situation I was in at the time also was keeping a lid on me. I mean, I would have dreams all the time about not having any control. Wow. And I had them all the time, and they always circulated between like 2 or 3 different kinds of scenarios where I did not have control, and it was like my insides were ready to just bust out and scream. Wow. And everything kind of like came to a head here right about the time that I transitioned over to the chamber. There's like a number of different personal life things, work things, you know, just a number of things all kind of came together at the same time. And it, the outcome was I ended up here at the chamber. And I think the atmosphere that I'm in here with the friends that I have here and the coworkers that I have here is made me feel very comfortable. Besides the fact that the other constraints are not there anymore. Plus, I'm doing this whole networking and connecting thing, which is really espoused by the chamber, which it has brought a whole new level of realization to me about the importance of making connections with people and bringing my authentic self to those connections, because that's when people like really connect, is when they feel like you're being authentic with them. Mm-hmm. So that combination of understand the importance of making connections, feeling comfortable and even encouraged to be my authentic self with all my craziness. It's like, it was like perfect. And I think about how, this has happened for me later in my life, right? And how much I am enjoying that right now. And just, I'm very grateful that
there's something to be said about delayed joy feeling sweeter, you know? And I just have to tell you, I had no idea when you took the lid off the basket, just how awesome you'd be. I had only a glimpse of you because when I met you at Itasca, again, as I said in the introduction, I thought you were lovely. You were kind and you were respectful. And so many people, if you're not valuable to them, they walk on you or walk over you. And you were always so inviting and kind. And I just always appreciated your welcome. So I tapped into your spirit, right? And then you also were very professional and talented, which is awesome. But it's the human who I saw and I liked, and I didn't even know half of her. So, you know, you're kind enough to consider working with us. You bring all this joy that's been a secret for far too long, except to your closest friends, of course. And then whammo, we get this. And it has been such a joyful, amazing extra that we never could have imagined. And, you know, for our audience, our listening audience, so the St. Paul, why don't you tell the story about how the DEI collaborative came to be at the chamber? Because we were looking for a person to run this program. And my first thought was Christy. I don't know why. It's probably a God thing, Christy, because I didn't even know that you were in a transition of your own, but you were just my first person because of your approach to things. And it turned out to be, of course, our destiny to be together. But why don't you tell a story about the DEI Collaborative and what you're doing now that is so cool?
So the DEI Collaborative was actually started by the Itasca Project. And it wasn't called the DEI Collaborative then, it was called the Executive Cohort. And they brought it to the Wilder Foundation said, hey, we'll house this program within our facility and our infrastructure. And so they brought in, I think there were more than one facilitator that they used for it, but they brought it into the Wilder Foundation, and the Wilder Foundation held it there for a couple of years. And then they had some sort of transition in what their priorities were and what they were doing. So they were not going to house it anymore. And then in the chamber snapped it up and brought it over here. And the whole reason for it, because this was before George Floyd and everything transpired after that. But the Itasca Project understood that, you know, our big leaders, our CEOs, really needed to have some sort of reckoning on how they were leading in terms of this space being a diverse space. One of the things Itasca, it's all about businesses and how businesses can be part of change in the community. And so when they looked at you know, what leaders were doing, they thought, you know what, let's do a program that really brings out certain expertise in leadership capabilities out of CEOs to start addressing the fact that your businesses are only going to survive if you are able to hire and retain diverse groups of people, because our population is changing and our workforce is going to be much more diverse. And if you are going to be able to stay in business, you have to figure out how to work with that. And so that was where it first, the impetus first came from to do this. So brought it over here. Victoria Ford started working with it here at the chamber. And then, and that's what they started calling it, the DEI Collaborative. And then we had COVID, and COVID kind of put the kibosh and everything, because it really works so much better when you are in person, and we just mm-hmm. couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, things kind of lost a bit of its steam during this time period. And then Victoria chose this time to take the opportunity to start her bookstore, which I can think of the name. What's the name of her bookstore?
I'm going to look it up while we're talking, because I
want to. I can't think of the name of it. And then, so she chose to move on to that. And then that's when B brought me in so that we can get this whole program revived and get it going again. So right now, we are in our build-up time period. This is what I'm looking at right now, is bringing this back to people and really helping people understand the importance of this. And this is one thing I say a lot as a person who's a passionate practitioner of diversity, equity, and inclusion, is that your skills, the skills you have to be empathetic and to understand diversity and understand how to work your workplace culture so that people feel like they're belonging there, all of that requires continuous work, because we are constantly being bombarded with negative messages about diverse people and, you know, what people are capable of. And so you're constantly having to fight against that. It's like developing your muscles. If you build up your muscles doing weights and then you just stop, after a while, those muscles will go away. And that's why I really reach out to people and say, your development in this area has to be continuous. You know what I mean? You have to be constantly finding opportunities to keep you attuned to the kinds of skills that you need in order to make all this work within your organizations and in your community. You have to keep those skills honed and not let them die away. So it's not just a matter of paying for a program to go to or doing a workshop. It's more than that. It's also about, you know, extending your connections in the community to be within settings where people are different than you, the culture is different than you, like taking those steps personally to push yourself out of the bubble that you live in. And all taking part in these kinds of programs and trainings and things will help you, you know, develop, you know, your skills and also your appetite for going out and pushing yourself beyond your current boundaries. I think it really keeps it at top of mind.
Well, so, and I can tell you too, as a graduate, so when I started here in 2017, I started getting involved in the Itasca project. I heard about this, the invitation was made. So I was with the class. Paul Robinson was one of the leaders, as was Damon Schoholm, whom, you know, I love. And Sean Kershaw was there at the time, so whom I also love. And so that the purpose of that group, I was among other CEOs. So that's how I met my good friend, Jean Crane from Bremer. That's how I got to meet my friend, Alison Rempel-Braun from the Science Museum, and several other people, Michael Langley, who was then running Greater MSP. And together in a safe, small group, we learned how to talk about, to some degree, you have to practice.
Yes.
How to talk about the world of a diverse future. Like, you have to ask questions that you feel dumb asking. I got to say this out loud because I've just got to check myself. Is this, what does this mean? And how do I communicate that? And it advances your thinking because, as you know, dog wags the tail, you know, the leader leads the organization. There's this sense of you're responsible for shaping a culture and then walking out that culture. And so you just, it was really good for me to start to practice the art of communication in a different way and to listen differently and to grow my own understanding of so many, many different things. So I appreciate what you're saying. And I can just really, you know, my personal experience was very positive, and you just get more comfortable with hard comments. They don't have to be hard conversations. You think they're clumsy until you have a conversation that's real with my friend Christy, and suddenly we're closer for having had it. And you've learned through the process, and I'm different as a result. Those are all good.
Yes. Plus, you formed these connections with the people that were in the cohort with you, because that's the kind of environment it creates, is that, you know,
that's right.
You're connected with a bond that's about this. Right. And, you know, you always feel like that's somebody you can talk to if you're going through anything where you're trying to make some sort of change or address a situation, that there's always somebody that you can talk to that you created this bond with by these kinds of sessions. And we were fortunate enough to get Paul Robinson back this year.
Oh my gosh, I love him. He is so, well, you folks, you need to know this man. He's from Chicago, right, Christy?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
He looks so tough. I walked into the room. I'm like, oh, I'm going to behave. Okay. I mean, he just looks fierce. And he has got this, oh my gosh, this joyful, loving, deep, wonderful house, heart. Oh, that is great news. Yeah.
Yes. And you know, it really does make a difference when you have a facilitator that can create that space for people, and that people start to feel more comfortable about, you know, asking questions when they might feel dumb, or how do I do this? Or, you know, it's so important to have a really good facilitator who understands that and knows how to draw stuff out of people, get people to share. I mean, we're having three cohorts this year. The second cohort, I am like participating in as well.
Oh, nice.
And we did this thing called the I Am From exercise.
I did that. I love that exercise. That's a story. That's a storytelling.
It's storytelling.
Yes.
It's storytelling. And the storytelling.
She's pointing at the screen, by the way, everybody. She's, you know, enthusiasm out there else. She's like, we could be hugging each other right now. Okay, so I love you. Keep going.
That is so true.
Yeah.
It's all about storytelling. And when you do the exercise, you're finding out things about the person who's doing their I Am From, either it's a poem or spoken word, whatever it is. Yeah. And you're finding out things about people where you're like, wow, you know, and then we get to ask questions if the person is comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And like, how do you think that affected you now? Like that experience that you have, how do you see it affecting your life now? And it became very emotional for people.
Yeah.
And I know that when you get to an emotional connection where it's down in your heart, not in your head, it's a completely different kind of transformation than book learning and
or shoulds
figures. Right. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. So you're right on B. That's exactly what it is. It's storytelling. So,
well, you know, and I will say this, so the DEI Collaborative fits into the Chamber's Equity Leadership Continuum, which is this whole idea about building relationships, and then those relationships go with you, and then you have allies in the community of like-minded people that stay with you for the rest of your career. Yeah. And if there's, you know, I used to think that it was too humble a mission to talk about creating connections that count, right? And what I'm learning as I get older is that's everything. There's nothing more important than creating connections that count, and that's what you're doing.
I'm telling you that it's the chamber that really made that clear to me, because I've already experienced, I've been here a year now, right? Mm-hmm. I've already experienced where I've made a connection with somebody and something else has happened as a result of it.
Right.
I needed to have happened, that it opened up a door. Yeah. And it might not have happened right in that moment, but it happened later on down the road because of that initial connection. And because we felt, you know, in our maybe a brief conversation or whatever, we felt like we were on the same page about something, or I feel something from you, or whatever. And it, connections, I can't even tell you, it's like I've been in my aha moment for now.
I totally get it. And that also means that you get to partake of that, because you don't have to be anything other than you to partake. You don't have to be particularly smart or powerful or relevant, quote unquote, because I hate that word, like not relevant, you know. But you don't have to worry about whether or not you're in or out. You bringing yourself into whatever it is that we're doing, is everything. It's enough. Yes. Not only is it enough, it's everything. And it just resonates. And we have to learn, right? So, which is why we surround these connections with resources and education. And on that note, should a CEO or a CHRO want to participate in the DEI collaborative? And folks, I can't encourage you enough. How would they do that? What would be the first step?
So please, it's very easy to go on the St. Paul Area Chamber website and go to the DEI Equity and Inclusion page, and or go to the staff page, and you'll see me, you'll see my email address, you'll see my phone number. Please reach out, call or email me. And you can also go on the Equity Inclusion page and see the information on, more information about the DEI Collaborative itself and what it's all about. But please, please look up staff, look at me, find my contact information, and please reach out, because we are doing, our third collaborative is going to be HR focused. So HR leaders out there, come on in. I am waiting for you, and we'd love to have you join us.
All right. So I have one final question that I'd love to ask everybody, and it has to do with, from your lens, can you just name one character trait that you think defines a good leader?
I'm going to say empathy/high EQ. I think that really is important for leadership, because even though we've spent many years as a society, you know, looking at leadership in one way and looking at any of these other attributes with emotional intelligence and empathy, as that's just fluff. I'm here to tell you, it is not just fluff. Your workplace employees need to see that you care and that you listen. And that's how they will get that experience from you, if you develop your empathy and your emotional intelligence, because it really is important for creating a space where people feel like they'll really produce for you. I mean, I've been places where, you know, I was like, why should I blah, blah, when you're treating us like this? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. people respond to it, and they will work for you. They will produce for you. They will make things great for you if you treat them well. And that's where I think the high EQ comes in.
All right. Thank you. And if you're listening to the very end, you get the bonus pleasure of Victoria Ford's bookstore. It's called The Comma.
Yes.
It's just called Comma, and it's on Upton Avenue in Minneapolis. And Victoria is a lovely human. We love her. Yes. And so thank you, Christy. What a joy. I learned about you too. And so I really appreciate you taking the time and serving the community the way you are.
Well, I appreciate you having me on your famous podcast. Is it infamous podcast?
Or I don't famous know. Podcast?
I will tell you, I have been listening to Julia Louis-Dreyfus' podcast, where she talks to women. It's called Wiser Than Me, older women who have been through it and have experienced introduction. So when I listen to that, I like, well, I would love to do a podcast. And you made it happen for me, Bea.
That's awesome.
Thank you so much for letting me share my story and, you know, the work I do here for you. It's very much appreciated.
Oh, we do it for everybody and we're all grateful. So, and thank you listeners for joining us on Bea's Table Talk. And thank you also to Wells Fargo, our sponsor. I can't tell you how important it is when our members support the work that we do on your behalf. We do have more conversations in the weeks and months ahead, speaking to business leaders and civic leaders in the greater MSP region. And we'll continue hearing from them on how their organizations are investing in tomorrow. Thanks to all of you, and we will see you in the trenches.
Bye.